Hey, welcome to New Game Plus. You're listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days.
We would lose everybody immediately. Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan.
And this is episode 195.
Wow. We're getting up there.
Yeah, I expected more from you. Like, every five episodes, you should do something big, I thought.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. 195 is just like the poor man's 200, and I'm not going to freak out until we hit the big 200.
Oh, that how we pronounce that?
200 is how we say 200.
And so you're telling me in five more episodes, you'll go off the charts crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to lose my absolute mind.
Okay.
I believe him, and I can't wait, actually.
We haven't talked about it at all, on or off air, as far as I can recall. Have either of you seen the promotional images and or the trailer for the upcoming Netflix original show, The Witcher?
Yes, I've seen the trailer.
I'm glad that you've seen something. Now, do we get Kenny's standard response?
He hasn't.
I know of it, but haven't seen it. Because that's my response.
Is that really it?
Yeah.
He's that predictable.
I didn't watch the trailer.
But buddy, so like you hear about it and you're like, huh, nice.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Exactly.
But just like with life, like you can fill in the blank and that
I'm
is.
Like, here's what happens when I hear, okay, there's a Witcher TV show coming out. I go like, huh, wonder if they're going to put the card game in it.
Kenny is the indifferent master.
Well,
I've seen the trailer and it looks really good, actually. I was a little surprised.
You saw, okay, so they did the teaser at first, which just showed Superman, right? And then they did a recent, like, week or two ago trailer. You saw the trailer?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it looked really good.
I was a little taken back by how good it looks because here's the thing. Witcher is a book series, too, and a lot of people don't know that. And they're really loved books from what I can tell. My friend from work loves them, like way more than the game. So I think they're probably going to pull heavily from the books than the game. Is that true?
Yeah. Oh, that's my understanding. The only thing I've actually heard about it was all the fallout of or whatever of like
no,
he
Witcher.
Has or doesn't have a beard. Like things that they did differently in the game versus the trailer versus the books. And everyone was like, oh no, it looks different than the game. And people were like, shut up. This is a real thing. That's not just a video game.
Yeah.
It looks different than the game some, but then I haven't played the game all the way through, but I played a hefty portion of the newest Witcher. And the characters that are in that game are in the trailer and like some of the races and obviously the Witcher Geralty and Geronimo. And like a lot of the stuff from the game like was pretty parallel to what I was seeing in the trailer.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna watch it. My wife is actually excited about it too because she watched me play a little Witcher and she thinks that the trailer looks really cool, so we're for sure gonna watch it.
I'll probably take it as an excuse to claim that I'm going to read the books and then not.
No, come on.
I think that it's trying to fill the hole that Game of Thrones left. So both of you, this might fall in that spot. Oh,
there's a lot of people trying to fill that hole. Like they're doing with they're making Witcher.
Yeah.
They're doing the
Skyrim, the movie.
No, the long series by the guy that Sanderson finished his books. Why can't I think of this? Oh, Wheel of Time. They're doing Wheel of Time. Like a lot of fantasy stuff's coming out.
Well, also they're doing a prequel to Game of Thrones. Apparently,
they would.
It's not like official announced, but it's like gonna happen kind of thing.
The warm up of Thrones.
No, look, I don't. This Witcher's not gonna fill the Game of Thrones hole. Are you kidding me?
That's what they're going for. I want them to succeed. It'd be great. I think the release date is this year. So like November, December. I mean, we don't have many months left in this year. But hopefully with actors and music and visuals and story, they're able to mix together the right ingredients to produce a lasting and maybe even magical effect. Mm. Like in our retro game of the week, Secret of Evermore.
Overview.
Secret of Evermore is an action RPG that came out on the Super Nintendo in the mid-90s, 1995 specifically, and came out from Square. This is Squaresoft back in the days of pre-Enix.
Square at its best.
Square at
probably
what some people would say is a golden age of kind of RPG putting things out. But uniquely, this was made by development team of Square here in the States. So most of the stuff that comes from that company was Japan-centric and then ported here. And this one flips the tables around. Was developed by a team of folks here and sort of written, you know, in English originally and all of those things. So very much has a kind of different tone, even though it feels a lot like the similarly named Secret of Mana. And a lot of people even think, oh, is this part of that series because it was so similar? Definitely heavily inspired by that game in terms of gameplay and all of those kind of things. But uniquely different. And Secret of Evermore, you find yourself as a boy who is swept up into a giant adventure, but not alone. It's you and your pet dog.
Yay.
And quickly you see a little bit of backstory, and then you and your dog get transported to this sort of fantasy world called Evermore. And
you got to keep it a secret.
Yeah, you can't tell anybody.
Okay.
No more?
No more. You said it was a secret. I didn't know which part. Just the Evermore part?
Canonically, I'm not sure that the boy or the dog has a name.
I'm not certain either, because they make you put one in for both. The dog is like referred to generically as like Buddy and like as a dog before you have to give him a name, but you're given a name. You're naming both people, and there's not like a default that I recall.
And I appreciate that you said both people, because dogs are people. But oh, what sure. did you, Kenny, what, like, did you name yours, like, the number sign exclamation point, or what did you do?
I can guess what he named such his a hard immediately. Time
after he that
named
first
his
play.
Dobby.
No, I used my game moniker for my character's name, and then I named it my dog after my dog.
Told you.
Dobby.
Yeah, Dobby.
He doesn't want to reveal that information.
That's PII. People are going to hunt me down.
He actually doesn't like people knowing his game moniker. I've said it on air before and he didn't like it. So I intentionally didn't do it this time. Okay. Nolan, what did you go with for boy and dog?
I named myself Kenny and I named my dog Darcy.
Oh, because my real dog's name is Dog after yourself. After your dog.
And Darcy. I'm trying to remember what I named. I named my boy Hero and my dog Wolf.
That's what like is official, right?
I don't know if Wolf is. I don't know.
I think it is in like guides and or maybe on wikis. I don't know. There's no, what's weird about that is normally JRPGs, and this isn't a JRPG, but they'll tell you the name of the character. Like it'll be Cloud, and then you can erase the characters and put whatever you want in there.
Yeah, which is terrible, and you should never do that when it does have a
exactly.
name.
Exactly. I'm glad we all agree on that.
And I was really uncomfortable that there wasn't one because very I don't like that. I want to know who this character is.
And that's one of the things that I think that's only one at the very start of the differences that we start to see here between a Japanese-made RPG and a North American-made RPG.
Even
and
the names are secrets.
But we're gonna talk all about that throughout this episode. But just from the start, Kenny, you mentioned it. It's super important. This is not a JRPG.
No.
And, And although it might look like it, in some ways it might feel like it, in a lot of other ways you can tell that it is not a JRPG. It's an NARPG.
It's an ARPG for America.
RPG. G.
And also, this team that developed it, North America Square, this was their only game to ever develop. So it either went perfect or terrible on from their perspective. So it'll be cool to like compare and guess what we thought compared to like why their careers were over after this only game.
Gameplay.
So we talked about you are a boy and his dog. But you're not just playing the boy with the dog as a secondary character, and you're not also just, it's not like a Final Fantasy in which you are the party. Here in this game, you are the boy, but you can also press select and be the dog.
Yeah, that's which is insane. Super, super cool. You not only have the option to play as either, but you have the option to kind of menu for either at almost any time, which is super neat. And they also put a little bit of really cool, like, AI on those characters where whoever you're not controlling is helping you out in battles or helping you out in other passive ways. Like, the dog is sniffing out materials for you to use on your adventures. And they did a really cool job of letting you have that option and jump back and forth and use the fact that they had two characters, not just like, oh, there's this dog icon that just follows you around and is part of the story. It's like active and super important to what goes on.
And I really, really love the dynamic of a boy and his dog as the main characters, because normally this is another difference. You typically get some emo boy and then he meets some emo girl and then you meet this buff emo guy and he joins your party. And then you just kind of, you know, go through the story being all emo. But in this one, you're relying on your dog, like even to the point where like in the first battle, it's not scripted. You can beat it. But if you lose to this like first mini boss, your dog like grabs your collar and like pulls you off screen. And from that moment on, I was like, OK, I'm in love with this dog and he better not die.
Right. So like the whole game is about the traveling around this boy and the dog, so much so that when there are segments of the game where you're without your dog, you feel that. And then in this world of Evermore, you go into four different times in history or realms in Evermore. So one of them is Prehistoria. It's Jurassic Park for all intents and purposes.
Yep.
And then you've got an ancient civilization, and then you've got like a medieval time type place, and then you've got a futuristic time. And we can talk about each of those, but in each of those areas, your dog transforms into a different kind of dog, a different creature. So it goes from your dog, and then in Prehistoria, it's this wolf beast hound.
Yeah.
And then in ancient civilization, it's this Egyptian-like dog, and then you've got a purple poodle later and a robotic dog. Like, your dog stays with you, but he changes forms, and not abilities, but just forms, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Which form is your favorite? I really like the Colosseum era one where he turns into the like Egyptian dog. You know, the statues that are always like on the, not pyramids, but on
like even in Egyptian history, like they've got that thin dog with the pointy ears, the long snout. Yes,
there's a name for those, and we clearly don't know it. But
are you trying to think of greyhound? Because I think it's supposed to be a greyhound.
Yeah, it looks like one at least.
No,
maybe it's not.
No.
Is it a whippet?
What?
You think Egyptians worshipped whippets?
Maybe.
No, Egyptians worshipped cats, and I don't know what you guys are thinking.
That's true,
but it's not dogs.
Well, no,
I'm gonna look
something.
It up.
I think I'm gonna say it was a whippet, just because.
What? Quit.
Then, just then there's really good songs that can play in your head.
Okay, so Nolan, yours was the whippet,
mm-hmm.
And then Kenny, your favorite version of the dog was
wolf, and I'm very anti poodle.
My favorite. I mean, I hate to just double up, but at least I was this week longest tenure with the wolf beast, and I really liked that version of it. But again, in all of them, your dog is sniffing around just kind of like organically as you move around the levels. And
oh my gosh,
he'll sniff just when he's bored, but he'll also like pick up a trail and follow a trail. So if he's like actively moving towards something, you know that once he stops, there's going to be an item there or a reagent, which we'll talk about in the realm of alchemy, which was my segue up front, which was really good.
It was really good.
But Thank you. But you can also, love this, use the L or R buttons on your Super Nintendo controller to force sniff, I think is the proper term, force sniff, the dog. And so it actively causes him to sniff wherever he is. So you can actively be looking for these hidden items and reagents around the different areas that you are.
Force sniff sounds like something that would happen
Star Wars?
In the Star Wars universe.
Force sniff.
Like a dog Jedi.
Did y'all get addicted to using that mechanic? Because I did. I was using it constantly.
Sure. I don't want to miss anything, and then I don't want to spend money where I don't have to. So
see, I just put my dog slightly more defensively set on the little AI when I felt like I needed to be worried about missing things. Because the implication, at least from the screen, is that he does more sniffing when he's set that way.
Well, hey, we'll talk about what you just mentioned, because that's not another JRPGs.
That's true. It's super novel that your character, since you're actively playing one and passively playing one, that whichever character you're not actively playing has sort of a range of sort of AI styles that you can use a little slider to select from, like, super aggressive, where they just, like, run after things and automatically attack them, to like super defensive, where they hang back and try and stay alive and don't help as much actively in the fight. But at least in the case of the dog, passively help you more by sniffing out where all the items are. And it was a really cool and unique mechanic.
Well, honestly, what is that doing in a SNES game? That has no business being there. It's ahead of its time, in my opinion. Like, that reminds me of paradigm shifts from Final Fantasy 13, where you tell your team out of battle what to do later, or in this case, it's out of battle sometimes, but like, I really was blown away that that was an option in this game.
I like the idea of it.
It's super simple, though. It is just a slider, right? Like, you've got six probably different positions to put them in between defensive and searching, or whatever the case might be. And so it's very simplistic in nature, but it is cool that you have some kind of control over it.
Yeah, the idea is cool. I didn't feel like the AI behind it was super complex or anything. And AI in general, I didn't feel like in this game was really strong. Even some of the enemies were sort of either just repetitious or would kind of do one move no matter what. And so I didn't feel like this game, kind of the AI logic is where it shone. But it was neat that they gave you the option there.
What's something else that you guys noticed that maybe sets it apart from other RPGs or JRPGs at the time?
Yeah, I was about to say that the way the battle works. So Alchemy, again, we're alluding to that. That's going to be a big topic in a second. But just the way that battle works. So this game is very similar to Secret of Mana. We mentioned it in the way that it looks and kind of feels. And I've never played that game. I've played Seiken Densetsu 3, but not Secret of Mana. So, but this one's not in that series officially, but you are not going into like turn-based battles where, like in a lot of JRPGs, you are walking on a world map, you get in a random battle. In this one, you kind of stumble upon enemies and you're moving your character in a kind of a free form way. And so you're dodging things and you're attacking. And to me, obviously reminds me of SD3, but like, I really, really like that because they did a couple balance things within there that make it not just kind of just cut and paste, kind of boring. They have this attack meter at the bottom and it starts at 100%. So when you're at 100%, you can do your best attack. So your most damaging attack, maybe more accurate too. I'm not sure if that's true, but you want to be at 100% when you attack physically. And then it goes down to zero and it slowly starts to fill back up to 100. And if you start spamming attacks, your attacks are way weaker. And so there's some balance there where you can't just spam slash everything.
But since it is like an active battle, all of your enemies are telegraphing their moves. So like, you know when they're going to strike or how they're going to strike by, even if it's just a second before. And so you can either use that weaker attack to knock back the enemy if it strikes so that they don't hit you, or you can just avoid the enemy's attack altogether. That's why it's so different from most of these games, because one, it's an active battle. Two, there's no random encounters. And then three, you can actively dodge the attacks of your enemies.
So unique. Yeah, I love that. I had so much fun playing around with that system and getting used to it. And honestly, like, if I had to pick between that and turn-based JRPG style, it'd be close. Like, I might still pick JRPG just because I'm used to it, but, like, I really, really love that free-form kind of play style.
Yeah, it's super rewarding because it's constantly active, which is great and welcome, and it doesn't let the game lull as much. I did find that between wanting your attack meter to recharge and also enemy attack animations, again, being telegraphed, which was a good thing, but being really sort of like it's attacking or it's not attacking, I felt like a lot of the battles had a really similar kind of rhythm to them that got a little old for me. It's like hit the enemy, run away, or wait for an attack, run back in and hit it again, and just sort of this in and out thing that didn't feel quite as dynamic as, I don't know, future action RPGs tend to be, where you could, you know, block or stun or do different kinds of hits. It very much just felt like variations of the same battle over and over, and maybe that gets better a lot later in the game. You know, you get where you have some range, and as you get to throwing weapons and to spells and spells on one target versus many, I think that gets better, but I struggled with that a little bit.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that it does get better when they start introducing weapon types to you. Like the weapons have unique attributes to them. They look different, which is a nice touch. First of all, like, you have a spear, and that one's the one I use the most this week. You too, Dustin, I think, just based off watching your stream, because it's also really good. You get a ranged attack with it, and you can charge it, and then it has an even better attack, and then you can level that up. And it's like, when they start introducing that kind of progression, I'm in. Like, if it was just the same thing.
It doesn't just make it stronger. It changes its function even. With the spear, it becomes a projectile weapon. Mm-hmm. And so you're able to throw it at enemies far away, and which is super key for some of the boss battles.
Oh, yeah, way helpful.
Really what you're hearing, if you're listening to this, is that they did a lot of things here, or tried to do a lot of things, and a lot of them are unique or different things with the weapons, with the being able to switch between the two players, the different things like that, the battle system. But one of the things we've alluded to many times, I think it's good, we need to talk about it now. And if we try to explain it in detail, it will get too convoluted. Just know that their magic system in this game is alchemy. And instead of having an MP reservoir that you pull from,
well said.
You collect items, or you purchase items, and then you're mixing two or three items to cast these various spells.
I love this.
By the end of my playthrough this last week, I had probably 12 different spells. There's a lot of them, 12 different alchemy spells. Mm-hmm. But you collect them throughout the game, and they each take different reagents that your dog's sniffing out or that you're finding, and you use those to cast the spell.
Yeah, I think that was a super novel take. Of all the unique things they did, that one was my favorite, just because the, like, mana, go to sleep, get your mana back trope just feels, I don't know, really sort of cookie cutter. And so this whole idea of you need to take the time to be exploring your world to find things, you need to be killing enough and making enough money to buy the stuff you need. If you run out of the things for one spell, you have to change to a different spell that you might not want to use as much. It made me think about it differently, and it served the same function of not being able to spam these things. You know, you can't have unlimited magic. You have to sort of gate it in some way. And it was a really neat way of doing it.
I'm glad you said that, because I agree. I think that this whole idea of item collection to use as your resource pool for your magic tied you into the world, gave us a purpose to the whole, like, sniff out mechanic, which could be just kind of a silly gimmick. And not only that, like, it opens up a whole world of builds. Like, and that sounds strange, because, like, builds, you do that in Skyrim, you do that in Diablo, but in this game you can only equip 9 formulas at a time, and to use the alchemy spell you have to know the formula, so you can't just use them all, and you can only have 9 equipped at a time. So there's some strategy in, like, maybe getting to a new area, and then it's like, okay, maybe that spell I haven't been using yet could come in handy, or you just rely on Crush, which is an offensive alchemy spell that was the best one by far.
But you also can't just change them willy-nilly. You can only change them with certain, you know, alchemy sellers or whatever
the masters
are.
Yeah,
alchemists.
Yeah, so you
so
have
good.
to you have to kind of like pick what setup you want to go with when you're going into new world or realm and like, and some of the alchemy spells are defensive, some of them are offensive, you know, some of them are maybe somewhat in between, but you've got different spells. You can cast them on your boy or on your dog, or you can, you know, or on the enemy or on different, some of them are even like the teleport or not teleport, levitate spell, right? Yeah. So it's, maybe you can use it in battle. I didn't try, but I had to use it against these boulders on the stages to be able to move them and then go through into the different caves.
Yeah, fun fact, that's the only mandatory alchemy to progress in the game, I think. Because you can't get past in the volcano with the boulders, you have to use it. But all the other ones, I think, are optional.
I think the speedrunners do a technique. Oh. But
well, sure, okay. But that's never normal. It's also worth pointing out, your levels, your spells level up the more you use them, just like your weapons do and just like your character does. So you're not just making choices about which ones,
I love,
but you're making about choices of which ones you want to use enough to level them up, as well as which levels, you know, which weapon styles you want to work on, and it adds a lot of complexity.
And another thing is like, okay, I have two spells that use oil. I can't spam cure because then all my oils will be gone and I can't use, I don't know what the other one was that used oil, but like flash or something. And it's like, so you can't just spam spells. Like it's such a balanced mechanic, and I'm kind of surprised no other game has, well, I don't know that that's true, but it's not a very common system.
Very few others, yeah. And here's the thing. With these kinds of systems, since they're so unique or new, not everyone's going to equally like that. Like, I completely understand that. The leveling system of items and alchemy spells here is very similar to Final Fantasy II, which a lot of people didn't like.
Nice.
And it's where you have to use the item or the spell over and over and over again to upgrade said item or spell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the same thing is said here. So there is a lot of grinding, but like, I know when I'm going into any kind of RPG around this time, Super Nintendo, especially Square, that there is going to be an hour or two early game where I'm grinding, and I didn't hate it then, and I don't even hate it now. I can't do it as often, but I don't hate that experience now, and it's just a part of the game.
Sure,
it
I is. Watched you grind on stream for 2 hours, and I was having fun. So
and it was worth watching. Yeah.
I did feel like it wasn't quite as mandatory here as some games. I definitely found myself pausing and, you know, getting a couple of levels up just to make things a little easier, because they did a pretty good job of difficulty being sort of on a good linear ramp, I thought. But I felt like if you were going through the game and the story and actually taking the time to kill most of the things as you progressed, that your level naturally was about where it needed to be to get through it, at least if you had mastery of the game, which again, I didn't. I needed to overgrind a little bit, but I felt like they did a good job balancing that, which can be really hard in a game this complex.
I would agree for the most part. I think that the first couple of bosses are abnormally difficult.
Oh, that first boss was way punishing, not knowing what I was getting into.
Yeah, the first boss is the one that's got like, it's a huge, crazy creature. I think it's on the artwork of the
bug
game itself. But like, it's this huge, massive bug that's got these claws that is protecting its heart, which is the weak spot. And then is the second one the big snake? Maybe. Some of the early bosses are abnormally difficult for the level that you are and for how early you meet them. But I think that if you can beat those first early bosses, that the later ones are pretty easy after you've got some really good alchemy spells and you've upgraded your weapons.
Yeah. Aged.
So when this game came out, there was a lot of backlash from the fan base, I'm pretty sure, because we mentioned it a couple times, but this is not a sequel to Secret of Mana.
You have mentioned it a few times.
it's the same concept, very similar, but people were upset because it was more of the same and they didn't care for, I guess, the Americanized style or version of how they handled this one.
I think you could argue being upset just because they clearly named it to ride that popularity. Like, when you're not a sequel and you sort of imply it with the naming scheme that's like the same, that feels a little deceptive to me.
It's a weird choice for sure.
Yeah, and there is enough similarity in gameplay to clearly be made by the same people, like the same company, not the same actual people. But I don't. It was a weird relationship that I think could certainly confuse some people.
Well, either way, I would argue that over time, time has helped the game. And I think it's aged pretty... How am I say this? I think that fewer people know of that whole like debacle, and they maybe know of Secret of Mana or they don't. Either way, if you just approach this game on its own, I think that maybe people back in the day were looking at it with blinded whatever. They were just kind of upset about other reasons.
Oh, there's certainly the whole aspect of this being, at least for us, you know, personally, and a lot of the people that listen to our shows, we, you know, are primarily an American or American-ish. I'm lumping in some of our European friends who just like right. English speaking and like not Japanese culture listeners. That's who we are.
Yep.
And I think that makes it easier in how it ages as well, because some of the little stuff, the humor about like the movies and the relationship like the with the B-roll boy and his dog.
Yeah.
Even the actual like text feeling good. Sometimes we get these games that are translations and they just feel real janky. Like it just feels, I don't know, it feels natural. And like, I don't know, that piece of it, I think aged well because I am that audience. And so that was nice.
I think stripping away the expectations of the game for when it came out, we can maybe subjectively or objectively, excuse me, come to this game and say, hey, okay, so do the graphics hold up? Do the music hold up? Yeah. And I know we're comparing it at this time, Super Nintendo, 95-ish, around that era, RPG. So we're talking about, I mean, some of the best of the best, Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI, those kinds of things.
Big
and so
games.
I'm not saying that it is an identical look, feel, and sound to those games, but in and of itself, I think graphically and musically, it is among the best for the console and the genre.
Dude.
Especially when you point those two things out, I won't disagree at all. It's absolutely beautiful. It does the SNES a ton of justice. Amazing details, layering of kind of your environment so you could see different things. Stuff just looked really good.
Well, y'all know I'm a really big fan of pixel art, and the alchemy system's pretty vast in how many items you end up getting, like a ton, and they all have unique artwork. And I was a humongous fan of that. Like, I love the little tiny pixel art for freaking oil and a can and wax. Like, that sounds so stupid, but like when you see it on in the menus, I was very pleased with the graphics. I agree with you. Like, I think it's up there and on par with Chrono Trigger SD3. Like, why not? I'm trying to approach this game with fresh eyes. I knew about it. I don't know or care about any of the history. And
and that's graphically. You know who the composer is, right? We've talked about him before, and I didn't even recognize it until someone shouted it out in Discord. But his name's Jeremy Soule, and he has been described as the John Williams of video game music. He did the Guild Wars series, which we played a little bit of. He did Knights of the Old Republic. He did some of those things, but he also did the Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, that's pretty huge and really massive. Weird too.
And like, this was his first. This was his introduction into like being paid professionally to come in and score a game. This is where his career started.
This is where it started.
Dang, that's sick.
And so really maybe you can tell that because you don't get these elaborate scores for the most part. Maybe the most iconic song in the game is on the start screen. But a lot of what he goes for in this game is different than JRPGs in the sense that it's very like atmospheric and like where you are, whether it's the jungles or just the village area or whatever. He's created some ambient sound, music, noise to fill those spaces. And it just really works.
It really works. I love the style.
I'm sorry if this sounds nationalistic, but I'm very proud of this game because it didn't come out in Japan. It didn't even get ported over there. Just there's a PAL version for Europeans. But like American composer, American dev team, artist, like, or I'm assuming the artist was American. That might be wrong. But like That's really unique. Not many games of this genre can we say that about. And so that's kind of, I think that's really, really cool. And I've heard critiques of the sound specifically that the sound effects didn't fit with the game itself. Like,
oh yeah, like the squishing bug and stuff like that.
Squishing bugs kill, and yeah, kind of cartoony stuff. But honestly, I think it was intentional. At least I hope it was, because to me, I like that level of humor is kind of what I would call it, like a bug squishing in the middle of a prehistoric dangerous time. It's like we were at the movies earlier.
But that's consistent with that boy's humor. Like he always is quoting these movies that he's familiar with. And, quick before we go forward, so Nolan, you're saying that like you're proud that it is like American made in all of those realms, and we don't get a lot of that today. So so technically you are saying Make America Great Again?
I am saying MAGA.
Okay. I just wanted
stop.
You heard it here first?
No, you didn't.
One other thing I think that is to mention here that might be a hurdle for people coming to this game in the 21st century, almost 22nd.
almost the 23rd.
Yeah.
If you technically look at it, it is. The menuing system.
Love.
I don't think it's immediately intuitive. It took me a while until I realized, oh, wait, there's another ring.
Circles and circles, dude.
Yeah, it's not just left and right. It's also up and down. We saw that in another game. Was it Seiken Densetsu 3?
Yeah. Seiken Densetsu 3 had a full-on, like, you explore the menu. Character moves and...
Oh, is that when you go in the menu?
Yes, in the box. I love this game so much.
This one is very similar. I understand it to be very similar to Secret of Mana. That's one of the things that they were just like, it worked for them. Let's just... reuse it, basically.
And it does work. I actually think it works beautifully. It's just a little bit confusing at first. It's not just like the Final Fantasy menu that's pretty intuitive.
Blue and text,
This is very different.
I think once you get used to it, I like this better, but it does take a little bit longer to get used to it. It almost feels to me like, I don't know, like the kind of menu you'd see in a game today that was made for both PC and console, you know, where they're like in a weird... you know, we need to do things in this flow kind of way. And so, I think it works.
I like unique stuff like that. I think it's a unique choice. It's kind of weird and it does take getting used to. I was a little lost, but I'd rather have that than just the blue background, white text. I think I like it.
If you do like what we're talking about, want to play Secret of Evermore, relatively easy to get your hands on. There are, if you want to play other games like it, you do have the Mana/Mana/Mayana series that you can go and check out. Just because it's interesting and I came across it, there was just a single guy trying to make a remake of Secret of Evermore. And he got, I think he pretty much got shut down by Square, which you can't do that because he was using all of the assets, but he made it full, like widescreen for a while, so where you could see more, where the menuing system was more like, just a different kind of system. It wasn't the ring system anymore. You could see your inventory, move items around, do different things like that, while trying to preserve like the battle and this, all of that. It was super interesting to watch a little bit of the gameplay of that this week. But again, we don't support that at all. We hate it. So don't ever, but it was interesting.
We hate it.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not this game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Kenny, how about you go ahead and jump in?
I will. I'll jump in feet first. So here's the thing about this game. It was very good. It was not great. Nolan compared it at a few points to some of its contemporaries. Chrono Trigger at all. And I don't think it's good enough to be in the big boys club in my mind. It's fun. They do the action adventure stuff well. It looks great. It sounds great. The novelty of it being made here and feeling really close is good. It just still lacked a little bit of character and story for me. I felt like things were kind of predictable, and then you like jump through the four eras and it's sort of like just four little mini stories in one. I'm not saying any of those things were done poorly, but there's just something nebulous about the game that I felt like it could have used even a little bit more I don't know. And that's a real nebulous thing. All of that said, it's a good game. People should play it. It gets New Game Plus status for me, but I'm not saying that it rolls with some of the big boys of the time. It's good, but not great in my mind.
So not it's as boy. Good as Chrono Trigger to you. Got it.
Okay, got it. You think it's better. Nolan, follow that up.
Yeah, I stand by what I said about it being similar to Seiken Densetsu 3 and Chrono Trigger in terms of quality, because it's so fun and does a lot of unique mechanics that aren't in other games that I ended up really, really enjoying this week just because it was fresh and new. Your character is basically Marty McFly. You have a dog. There are so many different assets like pixel arts and just the four different worlds are so cool looking. I loved this game so much, and I don't get why people say it's not good, because quite a few reviews out there online kind of bash it, and I'm not convinced. The only downsides I found were the hitbox is being really questionable at times, and that's about it. I really like this game, New Game Plus.
So we've got one big boy, one medium boy, and I would say, I mean, I agree with most of the things that have been said, except I would just go forward probably a little past both of you and say that this is an absolutely splendid game. It's unique in so many different ways. We named some of them, but some of the things we can't even fully describe, like the story and the characterization and some of those things, you can't really just hear us talk about that. You have to see it and experience it yourself. That sets it apart from its contemporaries. I love when game companies try different things and they work. I really love that this is American made too, and you see and sense that. I don't know why, whether or not this game was successful. I don't know why Square's US or North America division didn't continue after this, because this is a wonderful, wonderful start, in my opinion. If Seiken Densetsu 3 was the best JRPG to never get a North American release, then Secret of Evermore is the best RPG to never get a Japanese release.
Man, this was our rebuttal.
It is a big boy, I agree, which means that Secret of Evermore is New Game Plus certified.
Secret's out.
But what did you think? We had a few people write in. Astral Soul said, despite being a huge SNES fan, I had never played this game nor heard of it growing up. I discovered it a few years ago while looking for games similar to Secret of Mana, and I instantly fell in love with it. The gameplay was similar to Mana, but felt more refined and added in an interesting time travel story and an alchemy system in place of magic. Although I only first played it more recently, I still felt a sense of nostalgia, like it took me back to the 90s. The soundtrack is also fantastic and great to listen to, even outside of the game. It's not a super long game for an RPG, but I enjoyed every moment of it.
Preach. You know, it's like so strange to me that this game, like a game this size and or scope, I guess I should say, like where you've got Squaresoft backing you and publishing you and Nintendo publishing you in the States, it went under the radar for a lot of people. Like, I knew the name, but had no clue that what this game was.
Corkster said, Secret of Evermore holds a special place in my heart because it was the first video game I ever beat all by myself. Aww. Something about the game stuck out to me. Its humor is very American, with our small town kid quoting fictional B-movies the whole time. It is the only game developed by Square USA, and it shows. Also fascinating to me is the legacy of the game's music. It's not surprising to learn that the game's composer was the one and only Jeremy Soule. In fact, this was Soule's first time composing a video game soundtrack. If the name looks familiar, it's because you've heard his work in games like Dungeon Siege, Total Annihilation, and a little game called The Elder Scrolls III Morrowind. I like to think that the atmospheric tracks that played in the game's glooming prehistoric jungles, bustling marketplaces, moody tunnels, and sewer systems all contributed in some small way to the movement of video game soundtracks from melody-based music to cinematic soundscapes. I'm probably exaggerating, but to me, this game stands out as an important artifact in the history of video game music.
I actually think that it's the thing it did most uniquely, and both the start of the career and the shift to a more cinematic sound, I think can totally be argued here. And I'm glad you did it, and super love that this was the first game you ever completed. That's,
yeah, I wish
that's such
this
a
was...
fun, like, nostalgia moment. And so I'm really glad we get to play this game for you.
In his full email, he had said that, just I had to cut some for time, but he said that usually he played on his dad's saves, so that's why he never completed games by himself for the first time, but this one didn't have a save, so he had to play it for himself the first
time. That's really special. Nice.
Someone else in Discord this week pulled out their version of Secret Evermore, and when they put it in, found their dad and their uncle's saves, because put in your own name, which is amazing. I love that.
Wow, that's awesome. So cool.
Garlisle finally wrote in and said, Evermore got a ton of flack back in the day. Being a sequel to Secret of Mana in gameplay and name, but a radical departure in everything else, it's not a surprise it got that hate. Today, though, it doesn't have to suffer for those expectations. There's a couple flaws in battle, like random misses, that the emerging ARPG genre struggled with during this time. In spite of that, Evermore feels very different from almost every RPG of the era. Muted Western settings and a focus on high-quality ambience over typical music sets it apart from its contemporaries, while reagent-based casting and big, interesting bosses set it apart in mechanics. It might not be one of my picks for top RPGs of the SNES, but that is a steep competition, and it does its unique thing so well that it's well worth experiencing.
This one didn't make it to the SNES Classic roster, did it?
No way.
I didn't think so. I think I'd be cool to put on there.
I would say that I think fairly easily, I can fairly confidently say that Secret of Evermore is now in my top 10 of SNES games. I would have to get a little bit more cautious as I narrowed that list down a little bit more, but I could easily say that it's in the top 10 and I haven't even finished the game yet.
Same.
Ten's a really generous number, and I think what he said is probably fair. It's got a huge lineup. Like, the SNES is just a sweet spot in retro games, both for
best of all time, probably
RPGs and for non-RPGs. And so, I don't know. I have a hard time with that 10 number, but I certainly think it's a really good game, like, worth playing and people knowing about. Absolutely.
So it made all of our top 10. If you're listening, you heard that.
It made my top amount of games. It's up there.
Make top 10 great again. Thank you for sending in your commentary. You can always send in your thoughts on the retro game of the week to ngppodcast@gmail.com. Go to our website or Discord. You can send it in that way as well. But for now, it's time to put Secret of Evermore to the side while we randomly select what game we're going to be playing for the next 7 days from our retro master list. The list is growing daily, and from that list, we are picking the game now. A game that was released in 1993, the first in the series, and it's on the computer.
I was 1 year old.
You're 1 year old.
Oh, tiny little baby Nolan.
It was going to be developed by EA, Electronic Arts, for the Commodore 64, but things got shifted around so that it actually came out then on the PC, Macintosh, DOS, that whole kind of system. It is an educational puzzle-like game. I don't know much about this at all. The game is called The Incredible Machine.
Why does that sound familiar?
I don't know. Oh, did they make books out of these?
I know these games were really popular back in the day. I don't know if it was the first one or if it was later ones, but I watched and played a little bit of something in this series at some point back in the day of, like, early computer games when, you know, like, I felt like Minesweeper was novel and things were kind of just ramping up on that front. And so, again, I don't know much about it, but I have some memories of kind of the general like type of puzzles that this universe had you do. And I'm optimistic that it'll be kind of fun week.
Is it edutainment?
No, it's just entertainment.
Okay.
It's entertainment, and for some reason it's educational entertainment.
Okay. It's puzzle-based.
So that's the same thing.
It's puzzle-based. You're moving things around, unlocking things, whatever. Find a copy of The Incredible Machine and play along with us this week.
ngppodcast.com. Go ahead and bookmark it, first of all. While you're there, click on Join Us in Discord, and it will take you to our Discord server. We've had some people join in this week, and they've been listening for months, so why not? Our community is great, and we'd love to have you in there.
Yes.
We want to say a big thank you to our those of you who support us on Patreon.com. We appreciate you helping us to continue to make a new and always improving video game entertainment experience. And we're so thankful, especially to our producer level supporters, Antonin, Bill, Ben, Garlisle, Dear Baby, Corey, Grim, Zach, Maxima, and Zion. You guys are excellent.
Thank you, friends. And listen, I will say this. We are so close to hitting our next goal. And then we even just recently added some new goals to the list as well, some new stretch goals. If everyone that listened to this podcast that does not currently support us came in at $1 a month, we'd be able to hit that goal and more. Listen, you don't have to. Everything we do for you is out of like our love for retro gaming, our love for our community. So feel free to keep just listening as we do our thing, as our Kenny thing. Does his thing. But Kenny?
Yeah, I have a thing.
Okay. Oh, no, you said a few things on this episode that's a little circumspect. But if you want to do your thing that helps us do our thing, there's patreon.com for that. We'd love to have you join the family in that regard and be able to get some sweet bonus content to boot. Follow us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Twitch at NGP Podcast, YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast. Listen to us directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play The Incredible Machines? Machine. Just one machine. Until then, I'm still Whip It.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Nolan's.
Plural? And this has been New Game Pluses.